You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Mo Mutsi, alongside me as always, the legendary coach Brendan Sir. And today we have a special guest for you, a former assistant coach, a former executive in the NBA, and now a legendary speaker who can be there for all of your corporate speaking needs. Mr. Kevin Eastman, welcome to the podcast. How you doing, sir?
Thanks, Mo. Good to see you, Brendan.
Well, let me tell you something. Kevin, like myself, is from New Jersey, so he's also a sarcastic pain in the ass at times. But we have great humor. The people in the UK don't get it yet, okay? But but they really do. But Kevin and I, 18 years ago, started coaching you, and both of us wanted to help develop mainly college coaches to become better coaches, really in the X and O area. And it became a real love of our life trying to do that. And so he's a dear, dear friend and one of the greatest teachers in the game has ever had. That's what's really important. And he has taught some of the best players ever to play in the league.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I believe what they always used to say, that if you work really hard and just take care of business where you are, ultimately, it will pay off. And for me, it paid off at a level higher than I ever thought it would. But I wasn't really looking for it, it was just make sure wherever I was the best at whatever role they gave me, whether that be Doc Rivers with the Celtics or the Clippers, when I was an assistant college coach, whatever the role was. So it's something that's simple to say. It's not always easy to do. And because it's said so much, it goes in one ear and out the other. And I think people who probably need to pay attention to that lesson don't. So I'm just glad I got good background or good upbringing from my parents, and they instilled that in me. And I think that's why I'm where I am, wherever that is.
You're in a high-rise apartment in Boston. Yeah.
You're doing all right. What made you want to pursue coaching? Because you came straight out of college and went straight to being an assistant coach.
Yeah, well, a little known fact, there was a league that replaced the old ABA, and that league was called the AABA. And they had franchises mostly on the East. For instance, the old Indiana Pacers, many of their players actually because they had an Indiana franchise, they stayed with that franchise because some of them didn't, get picked up by the NBA. So we were playing against some of those guys, right? But anyway, there was a team in Virginia that they had in Richmond, Virginia, and I went to the University of Richmond. So right out of college, I thought, wow, this would be a great opportunity. Brendan will remember these names. We had like Mo Howard was on our team.
Yeah,
Jesse Dark played with the Knicks. Right. So it was a pretty good team. Mike Dunleavy was playing in the league. Roger Keller was playing in the league with Indiana. Nedelecki was in his last few years.
Wow.
So anyway, so I played a little bit. And then once that league folded, it made sense to me that if I could stay in basketball, I would. And the local college coach at the University of Richmond, a guy by the name of Lou Goetz, asked, because I was an alum and had a good career there, hey, would you want to be a graduate assistant? So that was the entry point that started whatever it was, 3-4 decades of coaching.
Lou Goetz, trivia fact, Rutgers University.
Yeah.
Passaic, New Jersey, mm-hmm. about, 15 minutes from where I grew up.
How about
that? Isn't that crazy?
And Dick Groat's son-in-law. Dick
oh
Rogue,
my gosh!
Baseball player.
Sure,
yeah,
and a good basketball player.
Yes, yes.
Went to Duke University. Yes. Yep. So, Kevin, this is really Mo will love this. So, you're doing a lot of work for Nike, but you went out and George Raveling, rest his soul, was one of Kevin's mentors, and later was blessed and to have him also as one of mine. He was running Nike, and so George also ran Michael Jordan's basketball camps. Tell the story, really, about how you and I met, how you went out and worked at Michael's fantasy camp in Vegas and met Chuck Daly. And then by your dinner conversation, listening to Chuck speak, how you and I then became acquainted because of your call to me to meet me in Orlando where I was living at the time. This tells you all you need to know about Kevin and how his ability to learn, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, to be in that room with the names that you mentioned was a room I never thought I would be in. But once I was in there, I understood my place. My job in that room was not to talk and to butt in, but to listen and learn. Because I think there's two types of people in this world. There's two types of coaches in this world. There's two types of leaders in the corporate world. There are know-it-alls and there are learn-it-alls. And I wanted to be the latter. So as I sat there, and whether that was be with Michael, when we were with him, with George, Coach Dale, all those guys, you know, they talked, especially Michael and Coach Dale, they talked pro basketball. Well, I didn't have a familiarity with pro basketball other than watching it. And I might say, yeah, I know the pro game, but I knew I didn't because there were so many intricacies to the pro game that we don't even teach or think about in the college game. So anyway, time goes on and I get involved with Nike and Nike hires me. When I got out of college coaching, they hired me to go around the country and work with the best high school players in the country because Nike wanted to first start to develop relationships with them and then ultimately get them to wear their sneaker, right, their shoe. So what we wanted to do, George and I sat down, and one of the things I said to him is, let's teach these guys some of the intricacies of pro basketball that I do believe in the next few years the college game will start to put these into play. And then I thought, after I said that, why did you say that? You don't know the intricacies. So right away, my thought was, you know, I better learn this stuff. So Mo, I ended up, so I called around to a lot of people and I said, who's the best at pick and roll offense and defense in the NBA? And the name I kept getting back was Brendan Sir. So I found his phone number. I called Brendan. Right. And I said, hey, would you mind meeting me somewhere in Orlando? Anyway, we met at a Marriott, got a little, you know, meeting room in the Marriott. And probably what he thought was going to be a nice 90-minute conversation yep. lasted about 8 hours.
True story.
I had 8 hours worth of questions. And I thought to myself, if he said yes, and I knew because he was willing to share everything that was in his mind, I better tap into this. And some of it was, it just kept going on. And I thought, well, I don't know about that. I got to ask that. Well, I don't know about that. Well, why do you say that? Why do you use that? Why is that angle so important? Right? He got into some of the minutiae of it, which I had to learn in order to even transmit that knowledge, even holistically, to a group of 18-year-olds, right? Who were great players, by the way, many of which became NBA All-Stars. So anyway, that led to eventually me working with a team in Florida. And apparently one of the kids went home from that workout and the kid told his dad, hey, man, I really love this guy. I was working with us today. He was sweating with us. He knew what he was talking about. He was pushing us. He was physical with us. He taught us all these little things about the next level. And, you know, little do you know whose father those kids are, because I didn't know everybody in the camp. Matter of fact, it was Keith Brumbaugh who I actually was sent down there for. But there was a guy, there was a kid in that camp. His last name was Rivers. And his dad's first name was Doc. Right? So Brendan and I talk about that. And somehow Brendan works it out where, like, you want to meet Doc? I said, well, sure, I loved it. But, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot. So anyway, like a couple days later, the meeting is set. And this is a big time meeting. You know, we're probably going to go into the Four Seasons or the Ritz or something like that. We meet at a Panera Bread. Yeah. And Doc comes in. And I remember Doc saying afterwards, he said, man, he told Chris, his wife at the time, he said, I love talking to Kevin today. And if you remember, Brendan, I didn't say anything.
He talked the entire time.
The entire time, which is another lesson. You know, you don't have to talk all the time to be remembered, right? He thought it was a great conversation. It wasn't a conversation. It was a kid with white hair asking this NBA coach a bunch of questions. And then Brendan would jump in and even go into more detail. Well, then apparently, Brendan, you can take it from here, but I think you and Doc had a conversation. You knew that he was going to become he was going to take a job.
So what happened is we set this meeting up because Doc's kids, Austin Rivers and Jeremiah Rivers.
Yeah. Jeremiah was the one.
Yep. They went to the same high school as my daughter and son. So when Doc had just gotten fired by the Magic, and so I said, hey, listen, after we both drop our kids off at school, let's meet. I got a great guy to meet with you. That's how it happened. And a few months later, all of a sudden, Danny Ainge wants him when he takes over. He wants to hire Doc. Doc's doing ABC then and ESPN as a national broadcaster. And Doc says, I need to fill out a staff. I need to get this. And I said, well, the best guy for player development is Kevin Eastman. The guy that we had a bagel with? Yeah, that guy. and so literally we set up another workout and he was off the charts. And it was incredible. But that's how it is. You know, sometimes you only get one shot in life to impress people. And I think Kevin's the best person I ever heard asking questions. His questions are so... he is able in any field, he can pull out things that you didn't know you even knew from you, because he can go that deep. It's not like the, hi, how are you? How's things going? What do you think of the fast break? No, it's like so specific and it's in everything, basketball, leadership and everything. I think that's what makes him so, and he's a lot smarter than I am, but we're both from New Jersey. So we know our limitations and stuff. But he's just a great learner, and I think that's more important than being smart. He learns.
Oh, for sure. You know, Kevin was just saying that it wasn't really a conversation. He was just kind of listening to Doc talk, and that applies in all things in life. You know, if you wanna know the secret to having a good date with a woman, you just ask a few questions, let her talk.
It's every good. Every podcast then just good. Goes to women every time, every podcast.
Yeah, well, that didn't work with me, but anyway.
Two different people. Wendy. Yeah, he's talking about going to clubs, and I said, clubs? What are you talking about, clubs? His clubs are different than our clubs. You're going to learn in Vegas this summer.
But bringing this back to reality.
Yeah, well, let's say, Kevin, there we go. You're back. Your camera disappeared for a sec.
So, you know, there are a few lessons in that story that that Brendan told. The first one is one that I think has helped this, you know, little shy introverted kid from South Jersey get to wherever he got in his career, meaning me. And that the first lesson is never pass up a basketball opportunity. But you can substitute basketball opportunity for whatever, accounting opportunity, lawyer opportunity, whatever field or industry you want to get into. If you have opportunities to learn from those who have been there before you, right? It's the old Chinese proverb. The best way to know about what's ahead is to ask those people who are coming back, right? So that was lesson number one. The second one was... you know, a lot of people do say that I ask good questions. I don't know that I do, but I just ask the ones that actually help me learn. But I do know this, the quality of your questions determines the quality of your information. The quality of your information determines the quality of your knowledge on that topic now. And the quality of your knowledge ultimately determines the quality of your decisions and your choices, right? So I definitely want to be the best listener in any room I'm in. And I also want to be the best question asker of any room I'm in.
I feel a lot of pressure now with the next questions that we ask.
Oh, no.
Let me ask you this. You know, because then you went to join Doc and the Boston Celtics when he started there. But all of your experience before that was in college, and then you did the Nike camps, as you said, and then you learned from Doc to go and teach to the high school kids at the Nike camps, right? So when you started working with the Celtics, how did you find your voice and the confidence to weigh in with your inputs if your only pro experience was from Doc Rivers, who was the head coach at the time anyway?
It gets back to what I said at the very beginning. I stayed in the role that was given to me. When it was time to work on players' skills, I knew I had competence in that. And one way to earn trust is through competence, right? And then time, consistency, and proof are the other ways to earn trust. So I spent the time. I was consistent with my teaching, consistent with my efforts, consistent with my energy. And the proof was anytime, you know, I said something to a player, I knew it worked, right? And I could give them examples of how it worked from previous players. So the proof would take care of itself. So I stayed in my niche, and sometimes people want to move too quickly, right? Like if you came to our Boston Celtic practices, you would not hear me talk a lot, except when it came into transition defense, because that was the area that I was supposed to be in charge of, which we ended up being in the top five in the league the entire time that I was in charge of it. No plug necessary. No. What I'm getting at there is that was my niche. And I wanted to be the best in the NBA about teaching that, right? And whatever drills. And we did some drills that no other NBA teams did, right? We just, you know, did that. So I stayed in my niche. So really in practice, other than that, I had a silent coach's input in practice, mm-hmm. which meant my voice wasn't heard so that all the people who are watching and all the coaches could say, wow, Kevin is really a good coach. What they didn't hear and didn't see was the mini conversations I had with players on the sideline. Let's say Doc ripped into him. The conversation may have to be, hey, stop, you're emotional right now. What he said is true, but you weren't ready to hear it. So I'm just telling you this, I'm not gonna name a player's name, I'm just telling you this, do what he just kind of got on you for, and I bet you don't get taken out again. But right now, you deserve to be taken out, right? And if you were a coach, you would have taken you out. Mm-hmm. Right. So mine came in we hear this term in the margins. Mine came outside the sidelines, outside the lines. Right. That's where I did mine. And then I did mine after practice was over, where I put together, beginning of the year, whether it be an exhibition game or practice, I probably gave Doc many times 20, 25 pages worth of notes just on that one practice. And that could be offensively, defensively, diagramming what I read about a certain player. Okay, not so much reading in a newspaper or a magazine at the time, but actually reading them. Hey, he looks a little down. Or, man, you got on Ray hard the last 4 days, right? You got to find something positive.
Right? Got it.
Because he is an all-star, actually. he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, right? So, but Ray, you know, in terms of Ray himself, Ray was great. He took it like a professional.
Kevin, talk about how you coached. And I think this is one of the really missed things of the word assistant coach is maybe the most misunderstood term by the people that hold the position in college and the professional ranks today. Yours and my philosophy was to always assist the head coach. And you had a really unique thing that you did with Doc after every game, where similar to what you talked about, where you would write up stuff that he could then read on his own time post-game, rather when you tell a guy after you lose a game by 2 points, hey, you know what you should have done at that point, you know, and they're not listening. You know, how did you come up with that? Because I think I tried to teach that to guys. I think it's one of the best things I've ever heard to help as a role of an assistant.
Well, especially now, today's coaching staffs, they're like 15 guys, right?
Yeah, right.
So if 15 guys all wanted 20 minutes or 15 minutes in a meeting, you'd miss practice time, right? There's not enough time in the day. So that would be number one. Number two is know who you work for. And Doc was a quick meeting guy.
Right.
So I wasn't going to, unless I had something that I really thought was important, and I practiced it before that meeting because I wanted to say it as efficiently as possible with word choice, with confidence and competence. I wanted to be able to get in, say it, get out. Right. So knowing Doc the way I got to know him, he's a reader, right? And so I just came up with a plan where I was going to do my notes after practices and after games. And if we were at home, I would have them on his desk before he came in the next day, or I would email them to him that night, right? But I know most times he was ending up watching the film. He probably wasn't reading. And then if we were on the road, I wanted to make sure I slipped it under his door before he woke up, right? So you might, I mean, Brendan, you know, in the NBA, sometimes, especially when you're a good team, you're playing like 8 o'clock and sometimes 9 p.m. games.
Right.
You're not to the next city till 3 a.m. And I knew I had to get my notes done on the plane and maybe when I got to the room. And then I always wanted those notes in under that door by like 5:30 in the morning. Right. So you might be going on 2 hours of fumes, not sleep. Right. And then you just figure out how to make up for it in the days ahead. So that's the way I did it. So really, I was involved in Doc's mind, maybe even more so than those who were in the meetings.
Yeah.
But the big thing was I told him that these notes are not for me. You don't have to keep saying, you know, Kevin said something to me earlier today, or Kevin gave me a great note about, I said, Doc, don't just say it. They don't need to know it's from me.
Sure.
You think it can help the team? Just say it. You don't have to give me props. I know if you say it, I've done my job, and that's good for me.
That's great. That's a great point right there. It's a great point. Kevin, you wrote a phenomenal book called Why the Best Are the Best. Talk about some of the best that you've worked with over the years, you know, going from some of those young kids that you had at the Nike player development stuff, all the way up to Garnett, Pierce, Rondo, Ray Allen. I mean, incredible guys. So, and maybe a little something about what made each one of them the best, because every player is different.
Yeah, every player is different, but all the ones who become the best have a few traits, I believe. One is they just love the gym, right? They're passionate about their craft. Number two, contrary to popular belief, they actually do want to learn. Right. They want to know that one or two small things that are keeping them from being even better, because, you know, if you think back on their careers, they started to like the game. Then they had some success in the game and they started to love the game. And then as they loved it, they got better. Right. And as they got better, they wanted to get better. And as they got better, they wanted to get even better. And as they got even better, they wanted to get really, really better. Right. And it kept on going. So they were constantly asking questions. You know, I can remember Kevin Garnett many times coming off of the floor when Doc subbed him out, and he'd say, "What'd you see?" Like, and you got to be on your toes, right? So, what did you see? And it may not be asking me, but anyone. He might be asking Tibbs with our defense, "What'd you see, Tibbs?" Right? So, for me, that was really important to see that. The other thing is they put in more work than the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know who shot the most practice shots on our Celtics teams? Ray Allen. Imagine that. How about that? That may be an ingredient of why he shoots the ball so well. Wow, that's interesting. The guys who can't shoot, they don't shoot.
How about right? That? Yeah.
Actually, the guys who really can't shoot, you never want to be that coach who has to work with them, because you actually get the workout.
Yeah.
You're stuck
from chasing the missed shots.
Missed shots. Yeah. One time I remember asking a player, "Hey, man, aren't you supposed to be getting the workout?" I'm not going to say the player's name. I said, "What are you talking about? I'm running all over the gym rebounding your shots. I'm the one getting the workout here."
That's great. That is great.
And other players only want to shoot in the gym alone, which might require a 10 p.m. meeting.
Right.
And sometimes the reason is they're okay, you know, if they miss there, because no one's kind of looking, and maybe he's thinking they're ridiculing me, or I'm going to hear about this crap about I can't shoot. No. So meet them where they need to be, not where they are. Meet them where they need to be. Right?
That's a great point. Meet them where they are. Yep.
So, well, mine was actually more meeting where they need to be. If they need to be in there by themselves and having a rebounder and a coach, great, right? Right. That's why I always tried to live by the facility, because you know, when you're a skill development guy, you're on call.
Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of
of shooting, right? Kevin, you worked with the Celtics while Rondo was the head of the snake at the point guard position, orchestrating the offense. The NBA now, to be a point guard in the NBA in 2026, you have to be able to shoot a three at a very high clip. I mean, there's one or two exceptions. But Rondo was an all-star caliber point guard, a championship caliber point guard, without really ever shooting the three ball. Is that something that was by design, or you guys accommodated that within your offense? And did you ever encourage him to try and shoot more, or were you just happy with him playing the way that he did?
Well, I think first of all, you got to figure out the player. And if those who don't know Rajon Rondo, he is easily top five, but maybe even number one at basketball intelligence. He's actually a savant when it comes to basketball. Mm-hmm. And not just like knowing our plays, but if I remember Lawrence Frank had like counting his out of bounds plays and special situation plays, had like 109 plays back in the day.
Exactly. Right.
Rondo knew them all and could probably tell you all of them. He actually knew more of them than probably all of us on the staff. Right. So he had an incredible intellect, and that can take you a long way. But you see, with Rondo, it wasn't about could he shoot it as much as can he impact the game, right? That was more important to us. And yeah, maybe shooting was one thing he couldn't do well, but there were seven ways he could impact the game. And as we balanced that out, we wanted the impact, right? And then he found his niches, right? He became a really good finisher, you know? And I can remember having one conversation with him about Steve Nash. And how Steve Nash, with Nike, I did a camp with Steve, point guard camp. And he always used to talk to the point guards about finding solutions when you get in the lane, because you don't know what the problem is when you start to go into the lane. Is it Shaq coming at you where you can't even see the whole backboard, let alone him, right? He's so massive. I got to have a solution. And one of the solutions he came up with, and he introduced it to our game, was something that was taboo, and that was playing along the baseline, which when you think about it was brilliant because it was so awkward for the defense. Mm-hmm. The defense never had their chest facing the basket they were defending. They always had their backs. So it was awkward, and they lost their men. And I wish we were even better at the time, because we would have gotten into, and the NBA is great at it now, cut, like I used to call it for Doc, cut the help. As soon as someone starts to help, cut.
Yep.
Right? But we never, you know, the guy who really became good at it for us was Avery Bradley. And if you remember, Avery probably had his best years with us, and he wasn't a great shooter when he came into the league.
Right.
It's because we didn't dwell on what he couldn't do, and we asked him, hey, make this such a positive experience because of seven ways you can impact a game, or six ways or five ways, right? So that was for us. And then sure, he worked on the shot and he became better as time went on, because you learn, you know, sometimes when you're young, you're stubborn. Like, I don't need to do this because I can do all these other things, right? And then I think one of the things wisdom provides for us is to eliminate the stubbornness and bring more of the awareness and self-reflection into our lives. And my guess is he did that. You'd have to ask him. But he might not be a player you want to play against, and we were probably a pains in the butt to him. And he would tell you we were pains in the butt to him, right? But when all is said and done, he probably loved being coached by Doc, and I know Doc loved him being a player, regardless of the gray hairs that they each put on each other.
Kevin, when you were with the Clippers, you had some really phenomenal players there, and they were borderline championship quality team, I thought. You know what I mean? Their talent was really good. If I give you some of these names, tell me about what your first impression of them, and where do you see them like down the road? Like a guy like CP3, for instance, talk about him, because I think he's obviously one of the best we've ever had.
Brilliant. Really, really knew the game, really knew his the attributes that could have help him have an impact on the game. You know, even to this day with the three-pointer, he probably still would you know, play the in-between game.
Right.
He was one of the best ever at it, right? And I think his thought process was, okay, let's miss six threes in a row, and I'm going to make four pull-up 16-foot jump shots. So let's see, that's 8 points, and let's see, eight misses equals 0 points. Wow, we're 8 points ahead because of playing the game. Yeah. How about that, coach? Right? So we never talked to Chris. Doc never talked to him about, you know, shoot the three. He shot it, but he could get to where he could get to, right? So really knew the game, was a stern message sender, right? And it cost us. It cost him a couple of times because the message wasn't received. The content of the message was unbelievable, but maybe it was said in such a way. And Chris will tell you, sometimes he's, you know, very direct. And that's where you have to meet halfway. The player receiving it can't always say, well, no, you know, the way you said, no, meet halfway. Because, you know, in those situations where there's emotions involved, you can't expect the other player to come all the way over and meet you, nor can this person expect that, right? So let's meet halfway. Like sometimes I would say to our other players, did you get the message he said? Because there's gold there.
You didn't like the tone, maybe, but, you know, or the way it was, yeah. You felt it was personalized to you, critical.
But Chris is competitive.
Yeah.
I don't think it was ever personal.
Yeah.
But my, was my.
No, impression. I meant they were directing it at a particular player,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, gosh, you know, the Clippers kept, you know, at one point over a 3-year span, I think we were the winningest team in the NBA.
Right. That's what
we
I mean.
Yeah. The winner.
Yeah.
Right. And Doc always wanted to be the winner.
Yeah.
Right. But without Chris Paul, you know, and Blake and DJ and JJ and some of the others, even a Willie Green was so instrumental during certain years with the Clippers. Right. We wouldn't have been who we were without Chris.
And while you were with the Clippers, that was around the time the Donald Sterling thing happened and he was forced to sell the team. And then Steve Ballmer came and bought the team. How did that affect the team in terms of the basketball side of things? Because a lot of places, you know, like the basketball operations and the day-to-day plan is kind of separate, but, you know, this was a huge deal for the entire league. How did that affect the team and the basketball that was being played on the court?
Well, there were different periods of that. There was the day of, right, when it was announced. But what people don't understand is there was the day before, right, where it might have been common knowledge to some of the players and not to the public yet, right? Not so much that he was going to be banned from the NBA, but that this stuff was coming out the next day, right? So obviously that hit them very, very hard, right, because of the subject matter of why it happened, right? And, you know, the one thing you find about athletes at the highest levels, they have a lot of pride, and not just pride in their game, pride in their parents, pride in their upbringing, pride in who they are, right? Pride of what they've overcome. There are so many pieces to the pride portion. And our guys had that pride. And the first meeting was very emotional. You know, Doc has talked about it publicly. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing that that I remember coming, well, many things I remember about that meeting, was coming out of there as one. Right, when we went in there, we were probably like this. You know, we wore the same uniform, but we really weren't all on that same team together about what we were going to do next. And between the players and Doc, and really, that's what happened. It had nothing to do with any of us as assistants. It was. And we were in the room, but it was Doc and the players just trying to figure this thing out and what's the strategy going forward. So there was a lot of emotion, a lot of pride for the right reasons. Then there, out of that meeting came a strategy. And then the strategy was that it would be a one voice operation. And the players actually elected Doc to be that voice, because what Doc wanted was something, a really powerful lesson. Look, don't let the story become about us. Keep the story where the story needs to be. Because Chris, if you say A and Blake, you say B and DJ, you say C and JJ, you say D, now we're going in so many different directions. We become the story. They don't even know what they want. We become the story, or we say something like we shouldn't say, right? Something that's set out of emotion rather than thought. So the one voice was crucial, and it kept our players just kind of concentrating on basketball. And the one thing I'll remember, you know, Doc may not even remember this, but I'm an early morning guy, and Doc is a late night guy, like late night, thinking about what happened, he probably watching some film, all that sort of stuff. So I go down, it was in the Four Seasons, down on that main street in San Francisco, Brendan, when we were playing Golden State.
Exactly right.
Broadway, I don't know what, the Market or something. Anyway, I go down, and you ever in a room, let's say I'm getting my coffee right here, but you sense somebody else is in the room, you're not looking around, and it was dark. Because a lot of times in at 5 a.m., you know, you coffee's there, but
the lights aren't on.
Yeah. So I sense, and I kind of just look to my right, and who do I see? Doc in a booth.
Really?
Walk over and say, what's up? And I'm not going to say exactly what he said, but
you're not going to say, what's up, Doc, either. Yeah. What's up, Doc?
Yeah. So I said, what's up? And he said, did you hear that stuff going on that went on last night? I said, no. And then he explained what it was.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first I heard of it. Because I'm an early to bed guy too. And it broke around midnight, as I recall, somewhere around midnight, right? So one of the things I said, well, what did you do when you found out? And he talked about a couple of things, and he said, you know, I said, well, what are you going to do in the meeting? Because this becomes like an incredible, he said, I know, my message has to be right. And his messages were always right. Yeah. I mean, he's incredible that way. But anyway, one of the things he said to me, I'll remember until I die. He said, I called one of my mentors. I said, who was that? He said, Wayne Embry. And I said, do you mind me asking what he said? He said, yeah. He said, he asked me a couple of questions. And I said, well, do you mind my asking what those questions were? He said, no. He said, he asked me, Doc, when you were a little high school kid or a little junior high kid, did you ever dream of playing on your varsity team? And he told Wayne Embry, of course I did. Then he said, when you were in high school, did you ever dream of getting a college scholarship? Well, of course I did. When you were in college, did you ever dream of playing in the pros? Well, of course I did. Right? And he said, let me ask you something, Doc. Was Donald Sterling ever in those dreams? Mm-hmm. Wow. Amazing. And he utilized that as part of his message.
Yeah.
He asked our players, you know, what basically what he was saying is, don't let someone else that did something that they should be held accountable for take away what we've wanted to do for our entire lives, which is try and win a championship. Don't let anyone take your dream away. Right. And I thought that was so powerful. In fact, I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I'm going to steal that from you, buddy. I'm telling you. Yeah, it's my next speech. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just because that happens to us a lot, because we let other people dictate like what our next thing in life is supposed to be. Right. And what Doc was saying is, look, you guys have worked your tails off to get to where you are today. Right. And you've dreamt about this ever since you were in junior high, and especially when you were in college, when you were getting closer to the NBA. And now that you're in the NBA and you guys are really good players, I know your dream. It's like mine, too. We want to be the winner. Not do a lot of winning. Be the winner. Right. So don't let anyone else come in and steal your dream. Keep the focus. You know, and then it went to game time. And, you know, maybe people got mad about the players like having their shooting shirts on inside out and all that. But man, when you're in it and you have that much pride and you want to do something, right? And they came together like right before they went out and figured out this is what we're going to do, right? So I never saw it as anything negative or disrespectful or It was just, hey, we're part of this too. And right now, you know, this group right here, this is our team. Now, we know we have to play in that uniform. But right now, as we're warming up, this is our team. And we have a blank shooting shirt on because they turn them inside out.
Yeah.
And of course, they can tell you more about, this is an outsider, not in their heads. You know, there was a lot more pride of the team than pissed off, right?
Yeah.
And that means from the coaches.
Sure. Like,
no one wants their players to be in that situation to have to do something. And if you do nothing, you're going to catch some junk for that too. Right. So anyway, that was a long answer to a short question.
It's all good. You bring up the interesting point, because I think Doc Rivers now gets a lot of criticism from fans and people in the media and so on and so forth. But what's always interesting to me is his ability to get his guys to buy in particular that Celtics team when they acquired Garnett and Ray Allen over the course of the summer. And then the philosophy that you always hear them talk about is Ubuntu, which is everyone is stronger together. And that really all started on their preseason tour to Europe before that season began. Were you on that tour? What was that experience like for you, Kevin?
Dreadful, because I got to see nothing in Rome. Doc went on all the tours because he was the figurehead of the program. And we were back watching film. No. Brendan knows this. Doc's going to want you to experience that for yourself, too. Like, he's not going to. Preseason, you don't have to be watching film 28 hours a day.
Hell no.
We're over here, guys. Let's experience this and enjoy it here. But, yeah, it really, I mean, ultimately, Ubuntu, that's a story in itself, too. Always have your, I always say this. I think the best leaders do this. The best coaches do this. The most successful people do this. And it's something I did, and I've coined a phrase for myself anyway, and it's to go through life with big eyes, big ears, and a small mouth. Keep your ears open to listen and learn. Keep your eyes open to observe and learn. And keep your mouth shut except when you're asking questions to learn even deeper stuff about what you just heard. Or offering something that can help somebody else versus opening your mouth to let everybody know how much you know. Right. Like I always say, I already know what I know. I don't know enough. I need to know what you know. Right. That's what I need to know. I already know what I know. Right. And every time I talk, I know that already. I need to know what you know. So anyway, Doc was at Marquette. He was on the board of directors for Marquette University, where he went to school. He was at a board meeting one summer and he met a woman who was also on the board. And they just got to talking. I don't know exactly what was said, but I'm going to paraphrase the whole situation here. But the woman might have said, you guys start your season pretty soon. Are you ready to go? And maybe Doc said something. Yeah, we are. We've got a good nucleus. We got brand new players that are really good. We've got a good core that we think is going to have a chance. We didn't know if we're going to win it, but have a chance. But I'm still trying to get that message of team. That team thing, because I know this, even though individually we're talented, it won't work if we're not all utilizing each other's strengths. And she said, well, have you ever thought about, it's an African way of life, an African philosophy, about the philosophy of Ubuntu. And Doc had never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brendan, you know Doc. That night, he was probably on the internet like for 75 next hours, right? Wow. What is this? What does it mean? What does it stand for? Do I believe in it? Right? Because it's one thing to say something to your team, but your team knows if you believe in that or not.
Sure.
Sure enough, after all his research, this is good stuff. Presented it to the team. Right? Even had the rookies do a book report. They had to come back the next day and tell the team what they learned about Ubuntu, what they found out in their research, and basically get in front of the class and say, this is what I learned about Ubuntu, and this is how I think it can help.
Wow.
Right? So put it in. But it really, whatever a coach does, it's only as good as the player's willingness to make it work, right? And to make it, for their willingness to make it work, they first have to believe in it, right? And in order to first believe in it, it has to be coming from the coach in such a way where those guys know that he believes in what he says he believes in.
So Doc Rivers, when I coached him, I drafted him at 20 years of age from Marquette. And he came down to to Atlanta with his girlfriend, Chris from Marquette, who's a little older. And he's just this guy. So I have him in training camp. Back then, it was the 84 Olympics with Michael and those guys in L.A. So we had our summer league in San Diego. And we stayed 3 weeks, 16 summer league games, Kevin, compared to now, 5 games they play. 16 wow. games. And I've got a team, and we had a bunch of teams because there was no L.A. summer league back then. Was moved to San Diego. There's no Vegas summer league at that point. So we play all these games. My backcourt is Doc Rivers and Randy Whitman, who ends up being our starting backcourt from Indiana. I have Dominique Wilkins. I have Cliff Levingston, Antoine Carr, and Kevin Willis. That's a summer league team.
Jeez.
And they were all 20 to 23 years of age. And they just blow through the summer league. And Doc Rivers plays 14 or 15 games. He makes zero outside shots. Any shot outside of 5 feet, zero for 14, 15 games. And I remember Mike Fratello and I, the coaches, and he says, "We're in trouble. This guy can't shoot. we're really in trouble." And all he did is kept, but he became the best driver in the league for a young guard. And it was a terrific setup. But an interesting thing about Doc is his weakness was really turned into a strength, because even with all these really great players on our team, as a rookie at 20 years of age, he was the leader of the team. I mean, if any place we went into a city, he organized them to go to dinner. I mean, I'd never seen this ever in a league, a 20-year-old, 21-year-old doing stuff like that. And then I remember fast forward when I said to him at the end of his career, after 13 years in the league, and became a terrific three-point shooter at the end of his career, I met with him one day in Orlando where we're both living, and I said to him, "You know, you really need to think about going into coaching. You really would be a fabulous coach. You got personality, you have credibility, all these things, you played, you'd be unbelievable." And he said, "Brendan, go F yourself. The last thing on earth I'm ever going to do is coach." And I'm so proud of him because he's finishing his 26th year in a row of coaching for a guy that never thought, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's got 1,000 wins now. I'm just so proud of him because he didn't set out to be a coach. He set out to be a damn good player, which he turned out to be. But he had great coaches along the way. And that's where he had Larry Brown, Pat Riley. I mean, just all these fabulous coaches. And I think that really was a great influence on him. Your thoughts on him, Kev?
Yeah, well, I often use him. As a matter of fact, I was speaking to a group last week. It was a group that brought in 50 of their leadership team from across the country. And we were talking about, you really study successful people. They do have a talent of some type, right? And every leader is different, right?
Yep.
Some may be great communicators, others may be great strategists, others may be great at revenue production, whatever that is, their talent. But the other two things, and Doc had these, was once you got him to kind of see the coaching side of things, I wasn't there with him, but I know he was thinking about it, working it, researching it. So there's a work ethic that is number one, uncompromised, and number two, probably uncommon to the human person, right? And his standards for how he wanted to operate are probably standards at a level that are probably uncomfortable to many, because he wanted to be that good, right? And then he had a humility He was always open and willing to learn more, right? And I think those things are qualities that he had. And he also utilized, I think, probably one of his strengths, the ability to, especially as a younger coach, the ability to hold people accountable, yet maintain a positive relationship, you know? And I think, you know, the best person, and I don't know him, I've only been, actually you've been around him more than I, Brendan, but I'll always remember what Tony Dungy said about accountability. You can be demanding without being demeaning.
Absolutely.
And I think with today's kid in particular, that really holds true. Right. Whether it's right or wrong, whether they should be that way or shouldn't, it doesn't matter. They are. Right. And you're only going to be able to coach them as long as you can get them to do the things that you think you need to do in order to win games. Right. So that but most importantly, Doc has a caring gene. He does actually want to see people do well. And he's got some tremendous loyalty. You know, when he was first announced at being in potential Hall of Fame inductee, I sent him a text, and you don't need to know what the text said, but his immediate text back was, "I appreciate that. I just want you to know that you were a big part of it."
Yeah.
"And remember Mbutu, if I get in, we get in." How about that?
Mm-hmm.
That's who Doc Rivers is.
That's beautiful, man.
Right.
That is really beautiful. You know, it's funny. Almost all the Hall of Famers, when you do, like that we work for, Kevin, when you do send them, whether it's Billy Donovan or any, the message comes back the same, is that you're a big part of this, you know? And, you know, you go, no, you know. But that's the humility of those people. That's beautiful.
Yeah, because I don't think, if you really think about it, nothing great in life is ever accomplished without the help of somebody else.
Sure.
I mean,
that's the way I feel about Mo.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, he's, I can tell he's carrying you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every show.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. and Kevin's fee is only £20,000 to our listeners in the UK for an hour.
Actually, I'm on a diet, so it'll be less than that.
No, that's.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, I'm loving all of this knowledge that we're learning. Kevin, before we wrap things up here,
yeah,
I've got a question for you, because so what's crazy is, you know, when Coach called me and he said, we're having the co-founder of Coaching You on a show, Kevin Eastman, and then he started to tell me about you, and I said, no, I know who that is already. And he said, how do you know? Like, why do you know Kevin already? I said, when I was growing up, the Celtics were, obviously, because my family's from Boston, the Celtics were my favorite thing in the world. And I studied every piece of information I possibly could about that team. And I used to wonder, who's this random white guy that's chilling with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and so on? They seem to love him so much. That'd like, who you, is this
homie.
Guy?
That'd be you, homie, the random white guy.
No, but do you know what I mean? I'm just a kid growing up, and I'm like, yo, they love this guy. So I did some research and so on and so forth beforehand. But what was it like working with Kevin Garnett? Because Kevin Garnett, for me, the passion that he played the game with is a big inspiration into why I've dedicated my life to basketball. You having worked with him firsthand and seeing just from the outside the affection that he has for you, and the respect that he has for you as well. What can you speak to us about working with the big ticket?
Great question.
Well, first of all, I think Doc probably summed it up best when he said this about Kevin. He is the best superstar teammate in the game.
Ooh.
And you don't hear those two words said in the same sentence often. Understand, I mean, like all these guys, you know, I had the opportunity to be around Kobe, LeBron, when he was younger, they'll take anyone into their circle if they're willing to work.
Right.
Right. He's not going to like chastise you if you don't want to work, but he's going to spend his time with those who want to work. So he's incredibly loyal. I was in Chicago two summers ago, doing a speaking engagement in Chicago. And it was at the time of the pre-draft camp. So my son, our son, works for the Celtics. He's a scout. So he was there watching the camp. So I met up with him, and then we had dinner, and then I was leaving. It was about 9:30 that night, and all of a sudden I hear this voice going, "Coach!" And I usually don't turn around because I'm hoping it's like not me.
Especially in Chicago.
So then I hear "Coach!" from this voice. Then I hear a third coach from a voice right away. I recognize "Coach!" And who's coming at me but Tony Allen and Kevin Garnett.
Oh my God.
And they're pounding me and hitting me like I was hurt.
Tony especially, my God.
Yeah. Like, and they were F-bombing to death and going back and everything. That's the loyalty. Not to me. Just, hey, like Doc said, who was it? Someone told him, maybe it was Pat Riley or Magic or somebody. They said, hey, when you win a championship,
forever.
You're a brotherhood.
Yep.
You will always be like this.
Yep.
And even though, like, I don't talk to Kevin a lot or Tony or any, but when we see each other, or if my guess would be if either of us need something from the other person, they're going to do everything they can to do it. So that's Kevin as a person. As a player, he had this, he's Velcro, right? He has this ability to, like, get everybody to, like, stick to the right things. And he led by example, right? Mm. And picked and chose when to lead verbally. And he, more of his verbal leadership was him getting on himself. I can remember he was taken out a little bit earlier than his normal time in a game. And he came down and he plopped down on the bench. And I'm thinking to myself, don't sit in this seat next to me. Just like, please. Because then he starts going, like, he's going off. He's like, "Kevin, you effing suck. You don't know the game. Kevin, you get that shit out there. Kevin,
you're
like, hey, man, I'm just over here trying to help Doc win the game. Why are you pissed at me?" And I must have asked him or something, but anyway, he said, no, I was getting on me. That's Kevin, too. Yeah. Why do I give you that? Because all young players, the best of the best, they hold themselves accountable first.
Yeah.
The best of the best, the pure best of the best, they're not into blaming, complaining, and playing the victim. They're not, right? There were so many times where Kevin blamed losses on himself. Doc blames losses on himself.
Yep.
Right? So, but in a nutshell, who is Kevin? He's a guy who does the unrequired work. He doesn't just work hard. He's a guy that understands the team wins, which means everybody. He's a guy that understands if a teammate needs help, he's there to help. He's a guy that understands how to send hard messages in a way they're received. He's a guy that understands that even though he's supposedly the best player on the team, starts out training camp as if he's a guy who's undrafted. Like, there were times I would say, now, hold on. I think that's Kevin Garnett. It looks like him, but no. That must be our rookie that we drafted in the second round. The way he's going at it,
yeah.
Right? And then the ultimate, we don't have time for it, but, you know, when he kicked Kevin out of a drill into the other court, right? So he'll keep on working. It doesn't matter. He'll work on the skill, even if nobody's on that court. That's who Kevin, he does the unrequired work. So... And I don't know, there might be some other things you thought, and I can certainly speak to those, but those are the things that jump out right away. And the last thing is, as a coach, if you have a Kevin Garnett on your team, you will thank God that he was brought into your life, because he taught me. I mean, that talk I gave last week, and then the one in Chicago, whatever, doesn't matter where I am, I will always have one or two Kevin Garnett stories.
Right.
I'm usually asked this question every time. Who's the best leader you've ever been around? And before they even get to the word "been around," I will say Kevin Garnett. And the main reason is he would never ask anyone to do anything that he wasn't willing to do himself and do it to the best of his ability as well. That's Kevin Garnett.
That is powerful. Yeah, we got to have you on for a couple more hours. Can we could turn this into a Netflix series? You're amazing.
100%.
Absolutely amazing, man.
We've got to get you booked for some speaking over here in Europe. You know what I mean? We'll get you flown out. And
then you can go to the clubs with Mo.
I don't mind visiting the clubs, like some of the soccer teams.
No, not those clubs, Kevin.
They're the clubs I live in now.
have you got a team? Kevin, you got a team?
Huh?
Do you have a soccer football team in England? Or?
I don't have one.
Most team. Well,
I guess if I had one at all, because one of my former players in college actually works for FC Barcelona.
That's good.
So when I was over there speaking, actually, and to this big convention over there, and we had it 2 days off because I had to speak on day one and then again on day four, I think, or day three. So we spent it touring FC Barcelona and seeing some of the insights.
What a place, man.
The new camp.
He took us on the field.
Yeah.
He went on the pitch.
The pitch. Those stadiums are massive.
Yeah.
Barcelona is one of the great cities in the world, I think.
Yeah, one of my favorite cities. He was telling stories about some of their great players. And,
yeah. Well, we'll go over it next year, Kevin. We'll go over, we'll take in a couple of football games, and then we'll maybe when the NBA comes over there again next year. Are they going to Spain?
Yeah, Manchester. Manchester and Paris are the two games next year in Europe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe we get the NBA to bring us over, Kevin.
Yeah, we 100% do. But you can't be a Barcelona fan. You'll be a Chelsea fan, because guess who else is a Chelsea fan? Not just me.
One of our owners.
Mr. Kevin Garnett.
Oh,
Mr. Ooh. Kevin Garnett is a Chelsea fan as well.
Like I said, one of our owners. He's the only owner to put a financial stake into the
He put the stake in blood, sweat, and tears on the court. But Kevin, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm honored that you took the time to join us. Thank you so much. If people want to hear more from you or check out any of your work, where can they do that?
Well, obviously, they could go to the website at KevinEastman.net, and then they can find, whatever blogs, newsletters, some things about speaking, whatever it is. But as Brendan will tell you, I'm not the world's best self-promoter. So if they go on there, great. If they don't, I think I'm still going to have fun tomorrow doing my hobbies. Like my wife always gets on me, Brendan, you'll appreciate this. She said, Kevin, you got to like get some hobbies. I'm like, I got a hobby. She said, what is your hobby? I know it's not working around the house, right? What is your hobby? I said, reading, thinking, putting together PowerPoints for speeches, learning. She said, that's not a hobby. I said, what do you mean? You got to get a hobby. She said, what are you talking about? I said, artwork? That's not a hobby. That's work. Sewing? That's work. You got to get some hobbies, girl. So I think we actually.
That's why they say. That's why they've been together forever. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we grew up with different dictionaries. So I'm going to go back and work on my hobbies, which is
Kevin isn't.
There's my desk. I'm going to get ready to go over and do some work and that.
Kevin isn't good at self-promoting, so I'll promote his book, Why the Best of the Best, by Kevin Eastman. You can go and buy that. However, Kevin, I don't know if you know this, but according to Goodreads, you are an American comic book artist and co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, that's the guy that in popularity is second to me. Okay. No, we actually get...
They put him down as the author of your book. So.
Yeah, well, we had to actually get with Amazon.
Yeah.
Straighten all that out. It may not even be straight now. We've had a couple of people say that, but we get emails on wanting to be a member of the Teenage Mutant Ninjas group. I always give them to Wendy.
You should start it. Yeah, just send $99 to this address tomorrow.
But Mo, you're right. There's
Well, yeah, I didn't know if you had a secret hobby of writing comic books and drawing Ninja Turtles, but no, definitely check out this book from Kevin, Why the Best of the Best. You can check that on Amazon, or I guess if you just Google it, Kevin Eastman book. It has over 273 glowing reviews, so don't just take our word for it. The work speaks for itself, so go and check that out, and you can learn more about why the best are the best. Kevin Eastman, thank you so much for joining us, and Coach, I appreciate you bringing this connection together, making this happen.
He's one of the best. And I've
thanks,
so
much from him. Thanks, Mo. Thanks, Brandon.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks,
and if you guys enjoyed this show, please do subscribe. YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And until next time, get buckets.